It's an honor to talk with you this morning. I'm going to focus on three areas of the changing landscape of science. And my comments reflect, actually, from my experience, 20 years at the U.S. National Academy of Sciences National Research Council, which is not only an honorary society, but also has a role in advising the American government and the American people, trying to do it objectively, non-politically, independently, and publicly. And also, 3 months in a job inside the U.S. government as the science and technology advisor to the Secretary of State. Let me first tell you the three areas that I'm going to focus on, and then afterwards I'll tell you what I think is new in the changing landscape in all three. The first is the pursuit of scientific discovery. And by science, I mean the physical, biological sciences, the social sciences, engineering sciences, and medical sciences. A good friend, Joe Palka, who's a wonderful science journalist on radio in the United States, I think captured it quite poetically when he said, "Science is the best adventure of humanity." This grand adventure is why most of us went into science, why children are excited to learn about the world through their own scientific discovery and experimentation, why parents bring their children to hands-on science museums, and why many people love to read and learn about the fundamental discoveries in astronomy, biology, engineering, and other fields, even though they may have no training in science. The second area I'm going to talk about briefly is the role of science and technology in improving the lives of people everywhere. Our jobs, our health and lifespan, our mobility, our communication, our leisure and entertainment, every aspect of our lives have been affected and transformed by the applications of science and technology and through inventions and innovation that come from it. Technological change is now proceeding at such an incredibly rapid pace that it's hard to imagine, much less predict, what new transformative possibilities will emerge 1 or 2 decades from now. And the last area I'll mention is the values and ethics that come from doing science and their relevance for the world in which we live. The pursuit of science has produced traditions and norms that ensure that mistakes are corrected, that our knowledge is ever increasing, and they engender values that benefit all other aspects of our lives. All three of these areas demonstrate the power of science technology to affect people. So what is new? First, in the pursuit of scientific discovery, what I believe is new is the enormous and growing appeal of this great adventure to the public, which I think is increasing dramatically. And let me just illustrate it briefly with a few examples. One is the great figures of science, both in the past and today, have really captured the public imagination. Walter Isaacson, when he was editor of Time magazine, he selected Einstein as the key figure of the 20th century. He went on to write a great biography of Einstein. Richard Feynman, who was one of my mentors when I was a student at Caltech, now more than 20 years since he died, has become very popular and an iconic figure for young people. Nobel laureates are treated like rock stars when they go around the world. I had the pleasure of going with Joe Taylor in Iran several years ago. And the auditoriums were not big enough to hold all the students that wanted to come and listen to him. The growing popularity of science festivals for the public, which are spreading around the world. I just went to the Genoa Science Festival in their 8th year, 10 days where many people, students, parents, and their children came to hear lectures about science. Brian Greene, a great scientist and communicator, was inspired by the Genoa Science Festival and copied it in New York City, and there are many other cities in the U.S. that now have similar festivals. I was in Medellin, Colombia. They also had a 10-day science festival, as well as building a new hands-on science museum. Also, the role of journalists in spreading the appeal of science to the public. The U.S. National Academies for a decade now, I've been presenting awards, communication awards in science, which really are for journalists. They're for books, for newspapers, for radio, on the web. The most recent book award went to a woman named Rebecca Skloot for her book, The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks. The immortal HeLa cells, which were taken from a poor African-American woman in the United States several decades ago who died of cancer, her sales actually have led to many medical advances. This very popular book looked not only about the science, but also about the ethics that were involved in that area. Over the last year, that book is read in many schools in the United States. And also the great biographers like Walter Isaacson, his new biography now of Steve Jobs. And lastly, the entertainment industry. The entertainment industry is going to, with their stories, is going to reach far more people than the science community ever will. And the U.S. National Academies have created a partnership, a small office in Hollywood called the Science and Entertainment Exchange. And the purpose of this office is when writers, directors, producers, actors are working on a project where they would like to talk to a scientist, this little office helps make that connection. And now it's incredibly oversubscribed. What are the lessons for the science community, I think, for this growing popularity with the public? One, I think, is the importance of teaching science in our schools in a way that maintains the innate curiosity of students, and that we don't bore students by the way we teach science, but maintain that curiosity. And the second is the importance of communicating the excitement of science through skilled communicators, both scientists and journalists, and by working with the mass media of all types. Let me come quickly to the second area, the role of science and technology in improving people's lives. My dominant observation in serving in my new job for 3 months is that all countries want to engage with the world leaders in science and technology, and the number one topic they wish to discuss is the role of science and technology to innovation and economic growth, to future prosperity. Most countries now realize that in this globalized and interconnected world, where there are 5.3 billion cell phones, maybe a good fraction in this audience today, that their future prosperity depends on competing. They know they have smart, creative, entrepreneurial people, and staying near the forefront of science technology is absolutely critical. And this realization is not only true for countries like Brazil, India, China, South Korea, Singapore, which have recognized it for decades, but it's now for a large and growing number of other countries. Ones where I've recently visited and talked, Colombia and South America, South Africa, Indonesia. These governments have recognized this imperative as well. They're making significant investments in education at all levels, from grade school to graduate school, in science technology, in research and development, in revising government policies to become more, to create an innovative ecosystem and a knowledge-based society, which they believe is the key to their long-term prosperity. So what are the lessons for science, the science community, and governments based on this changing landscape? One is to focus on the fundamentals of spurring innovation through science technology, which includes investments in education, research, and science. The importance of developing traditions in each country to hear the advice of their non-governmental science community on public policy issues, and also the need for having scientifically trained people in every agency of our governments. In the United States, the AAAS, through its fellowship program over nearly four decades, has brought many young PhDs for a year or two in U.S. government. Many have stayed, actually, and become permanent civil servants to make a career. And the State Department has greatly increased the capacity of the State Department to deal with scientific and technological aspects of foreign policy and international relations. And lastly, science is a great asset for diplomacy. It opens doors to deal with other issues. Scientists speak a common language. They can build a dialogue, even when countries have very difficult political differences. Now, this certainly happened between the U.S. and the Soviet Union during the height of the Cold War. With the renormalization between the U.S. and China in the 1970s, you heard how the AAAS has set up a Center for Science Diplomacy. They have a dialogue right now in dealing with North Korea, dealing with Burma, dealing with Cuba, where government relations with the U.S. are very difficult. So science diplomacy can also be of enormous benefit to the world. The last topic, as I mentioned, was values that arise from conducting science and their relevance for other aspects of our lives. This topic was mentioned by one of my former bosses, National Academy of Science President Bruce Alberts, in a talk that he gave in 1999 to the members of the U.S. Academy of Sciences. And the values that he emphasized were integrity, honesty, generosity, respect for evidence, openness to all ideas and opinions, irrespective of their source. I think we can add to that list things like value and excellence and meritocracy, peer review, academic freedom, transparency via publication, the entrepreneurial spirit, emphasizing the value of the individual, an equalizing force in society, because we need people of all backgrounds, genders, and cultures, working for the common good, being an agent of change in society, and also, I think especially important, be a source of optimism about the future. The values of science support the values of democratic societies. The Enlightenment helped to spur both the modern scientific revolution and the emergence of democratic societies. So I think the last lesson, which is not a new lesson, but it's really just reaffirmed in recent times, is this close connection between science and democracy. And I believe it is also the ultimate connection between science and diplomacy, science serving as an agent of change around the world. I would like to close with a quote from a great scientist humanist, Jacob Bronowski. He gave a talk at MIT in the 1950s in a small book that was published called Science and Human Values. Bruce Alberts actually quoted from it in a speech in 1999, but I'll read only one sentence from it. He said, "Men have asked for freedom, justice, and respect precisely as the scientific spirit has spread among them." I think this lesson has been illustrated through the Arab Spring and all the young people that were involved in it. Thank you very much.